You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith, and joining me today is David Weiser from Film Assessment.
Heyo.
And today we are going to be talking about Mary Poppins Returns and Aquaman. Yes, those movies came out almost a month ago, but I've been busy, and holidays hit us, and... yeah, so I'm just now getting to like watch these movies. I know I said 3 weeks ago we would review them, but here we are. So first, let's start with Mary Poppins. David, what did you think of Mary Poppins?
I thought it was so delightful. I especially love the hand-drawn animation section. And I thought like the effects were wonderful. Like I loved all the music. The choreography was great. The cinematography was nice. I like the production design, the costumes, like, and Blunt was incredible. So yeah, and then Lin-Manuel Miranda as well was pretty great.
So I have no emotional attachment to the very first movie, or I guess the old 64 version. Because I have seen it. I have seen Mary Poppins the movie. It's just been like when I was maybe on the cusp of becoming a teenager the last time I saw it. So for me going in, and I did not rewatch it because I heard a bunch of my colleagues say, if you really want to get the most out of it, just, you know, go into this one as blind as possible or cold as possible to the first one. And I did, and it is a joyous movie. It's a fun movie. It is a, it's a soft movie. It's the kind of movie that really was perfect for a Christmas release, and it's so delightful and nice that you wonder to yourself, why is Colin Firth the antagonist of this movie? Why do we need a villain in this movie? A literal villain, I should say.
Yeah, I thought his character was a little cartoonish. That was one of the areas that I was like, it could have been improved. But otherwise, I loved it. I mean, I'm a big musical guy, and this has been the musical that's impressed me the most since La La Land. Everything else has been kind of mediocre for me.
Even Greatest Showman.
Yeah, I wasn't too particularly. Like, I thought that one was all right, but I don't know. I thought I didn't really love it like a lot of people did.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the next great musical like La La Land, because La La Land had vibrant cinematography, and not by like beautifully shot. It's, I mean, the camera moves in very specific ways that, you know, adds energy, and Tom Cross's editing is, you know, top notch. So with this, the problem for me is it's really good. Like, the musical numbers are really outstanding. Or the songs themselves are outstanding. The problem is more for me, it still has that Rob Marshall feel where everything is very theater-like. Everything's very theatrical. Everything's feels very much like we're on a soundstage or we're on a stage somewhere, and it has that, you know, it has that lack of, you know, cinematic quality.
Yeah, where, I didn't mind that because it charmed me so much, and the original is kind of like that as well in a sense. And I also have a not extensive, but I have a somewhat of a background in musical theater. I did it in high school and stuff, so like, I don't know, that didn't bother me so much. I mean, I definitely do prefer La La Land over this, but it's I still loved this as well.
Yeah, I think honestly, Mary Poppins is my, I think the only thing I can really say about it is it's a really nice movie. Emily Blunt does a really good job, especially the song of Things Are Not Always Lost Forever. Is that the song I'm thinking of?
That's one of them. I mean, there's a lot of songs. That it's something along those lines. I don't know if you got the name like exact, but it's something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Emily Blunt nails the emotionality of the character, because in the story, it really is interesting, because the story is about these kids who are going through a rough time, and their father and aunt that's going through, you know, an even rougher time, trying to make ends meet, and also, like, you know, not get kicked out of their house. So I feel, so that song is basically kind of like, you know, indicative of the entire film. It's the sweetness, but also it's, you know, but also it's, you know, the tragedy of the Banks is that, you know, now, you know, 20 years later, they're about to be, you know, in poverty, or they're facing poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas their father at the end of the movie, or where their grandfather, the Banks children's grandfather, they, you know, was, you know, working to provide a rich, meaningful life. And now, juxtaposed 20 years later, you know, they're about to be in poverty. So it's a really interesting tale. And I wish the movie had kind of dived into that more. But honestly, it's a nice, delightful film. You brought up Lin-Manuel Miranda. I really have no idea what he's doing with his accent, other than he's trying to also make a fake British accent like Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah.
Like that, I don't know, like that. And also, he's in almost every song of the movie, so there's no escaping. So if you're not, I'll say this, if you're not on board with Lin-Manuel Miranda in this movie, you're just going to be sitting there like, oh my god, like, this is ridiculous. Like, and it's so weird, because we both know Lin-Manuel Miranda is a really great, you know, singer and songwriter from Hamilton and Moana. So it's just, dang it, like, this didn't, like, that didn't work for me. I'm glad it worked for you, though.
Yeah, I thought he did an excellent job, in my opinion. I totally dug it. I mean, he's going for like the Cockney accent, not necessarily like the like refined British accent. So that's kind of works for me, because that is kind of what the Cockneys more sounds like.
Right. I don't know. As I was watching the movie, all I was just thinking was, man, are all the British actors now in America doing stuff, and they just had to get an American actor to do a British role or a Cockney role? It couldn't. It's what it is for me. But yeah, again, I think the movie is fine. It's, you know, like, Rob Marshall brings the joy. He doesn't make it overly cynical. In fact, he doesn't really bring a whole lot of cynicism to the picture, other than, you know, with Colin Firth's character. But in the end, I still, you know, wonder, since Rob Marshall also was part of the writing team that worked on this movie, like, why did we need Colin Firth, or why did we need Meryl Streep in this movie?
Meryl Streep was definitely like, that was kind of a shoehorned cameo kind of thing. I didn't mind it, but like, it didn't really have a place in the narrative per se, because they never went back after they go on a detour to have the Meryl Streep musical number, and then it's never really revisited at all.
Yeah. So like, she never has come back later.
Those two things were little minor nitpicks I had. Other than that, like, I don't know, it charmed me like Paddington 2 did. Like, it was that kind of experience for me.
Okay. And honestly, that's fine. And that's great. In the end, I still kind of think Christopher Robin is kind of like the better of these movies where it's about the dad who's struggling to, you know, to balance, you know, working and being, you know, a father. And I think I feel like it captures that, you know, reality even better, in even better sense. There's not like a literal, you know, mustache twirling villain that's, you know, making everything harder.
Well, there in Christopher Robin, there kind of is. Like, there was his boss that was kind of he was kind of mustache twirling. Kind of, it's a very similar role actually to Colin Farrell's, but in a smaller capacity.
It is, but you don't see like that character like trying to beat, you know, Ewan McGregor to, you know, to the race, or trying to, you know, cheat him. You don't see him literally trying to stop our characters from meeting their goal.
It's been a while since I watched Christopher Robin because it came out in the summer, and mm-hmm. I haven't watched it at home yet, even though I got it. But I do remember, I vaguely remember that he did somewhat impede, like he kind of added on to his workload and like kind of made life more difficult for him, is how I remember it.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, but it's just not as literal as it is here or in Paddington movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always kind of been my thing is these movies are so nice. They're so like, you know, warm and cozy. Why do we need, you know, an antagonist when the plot already moves, you know, very well on each of these films? And why do we need something literal to point a finger as this is bad, as like a holding the audience kind of way? And yes, these are kid movies. I get it. But I mean, you know, I think you have to kind of understand the story you're making. Like, the movie is trying to tell you don't need an antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying. But I think for me, like I said, that was one thing that I was like, I don't think his role was that particularly meaningful to the plot beyond being the antagonist. But mm-hmm. it didn't detract from it too much for me. And
yeah.
And I think it kind of, in Paddington at least, in Paddington 2, actually both Paddingtons, the antagonists do kind of tie in more to the plot and story.
I think it more so they do. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I guess so, but I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know. But that's just kind of been my kind of opinion. And it was even more apparent in Mary Poppins Returns, where I was like, this is so warm and nice. And, you know, there's already, you know, this conflict, you know, this established conflict. Why do we need more conflict in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my take. I mean, so, but yeah, I mean, Mary Poppins is, it's a fun movie. The climax is a little ridiculous, or it's a little ridiculous, but then again, this is not like a realistic, this is not dark and gritty realistic take on Mary Poppins. So, or it never presents itself to be, so whatever. Yeah, it's a nice movie. It was a nice Christmas movie. Do you have any more thoughts to say on Mary Poppins?
I kind of said it all. Whimsical musical that charmed my socks off.
It charmed me a little bit from time to time. But so with that, do you want to get into Aquaman?
Yeah, sure. Let's dive in.
My father was a lighthouse keeper. My mother was a queen. But life has a way of bringing people together.
We could unite our worlds one day.
Check it out. Arthur is talking to the fish.
They made me what I am. Permission to come aboard.
I've been looking for you. Your half-brother, King Orm, is about to declare war upon the surface world. The only way to stop this war is for you to take your rightful place as king.
Trust me, I am no king.
You do your best thinking when you're not thinking at all.
That was the worst pep talk ever.
You might want to strap in.
Ha ha ha. Let's jump into the... Let's jump into this review. No, nothing. All right. So, do you want to go? So, do you want to talk about what do you think about Aquaman?
I thought it was good, but like it was kind of, my opinion was kind of all over the place with this one because like there's some really, 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 really cheesy moments in it that either make or break it. Well, at least it make or break those specific scenes. And I guess we'll highlight those when we get to the spoiler section. But those moments kind of lowered it. But I thought like the visual spectacle in it was incredible. I really enjoyed the action. Jason Momoa and Amber Heard were good, but I didn't think they had particularly great chemistry with one another. I don't know. That was just something that kind of stuck out to me. I enjoyed it overall, though. It's probably my second favorite DCEU movie after Wonder Woman, but I enjoyed it. I've seen it twice. I'll probably buy it on Blu-ray.
So I've seen Aquaman twice now, and it definitely is the second best DCEU movie. It's at number two. Wonder Woman's at number one, and then it's, you know, the BVS Ultimate Cut, and then Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, Justice League for me. No, wait, switch those. Just Suicide Squad's still the worst.
Yeah, I agree with that.
and not because, I mean, Justice League is a horrid film as well. Like, I can't believe, but Suicide Squad, it literally has gotten even worse and worse every time I watch it. So, which is odd because when I first saw it, I was like, this is not as bad as I thought it was going to be. But no, every time I watch it, it's like, every time I watch it, I think, man, that Amanda Waller, she's really dumb. This whole thing, movie's dumb.
Sorry. I've had a similar experience with Suicide Squad in terms of, I enjoyed it at first. And then with further rewatches, the flaws kind of stuck out more.
Yeah. So not to go on a tangent, but I mean, Suicide Squad's one of those premises where you kind of have to nail the reason it needs to exist. And Suicide Squad never even attempts to nail the reason of why this should be happening in any universe.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like that's kind of, and that's the, you know, larger failure of Suicide Squad, is it doesn't have a reason to exist. Mm-hmm. But with Aquaman, I feel like it does. I feel like it does justify its existence. By just being a solo film that doesn't have too much to do with the DCEU. There's a few lines, you know, referencing to Justice League here and there. But other than that, it's a pretty much, you know, a standalone soft reboot. And by soft reboot, I mean of tone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it justifies itself by being, you know, okay, this is where we're going to go from here on out, even though the people who greenlit this production are already, you know, out of the house, and there's a new mm-hmm. person in charge. So what more do you, so I mean, how do you feel about this new tone then?
I thought it was a little kind of it at times. It kind of veered a little too much into cheesy kind of cartoonish vibe, but I prefer it to like the super grim, like hopeless, like of the Snyder films. I don't know. I think Wonder Woman's a really good happy medium, and this is kind of like the this isn't like Batman and Robin silly, but at times it's in that side of the spectrum.
Yeah. So I need to kind of break this in. I think James Wan does a really impeccable job with Aquaman as the direction. However, the script is kind of terrible.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I mean, Black Manta's introduction is like, while they're raiding the ship as pirates, he tells them the story about this knife or dagger. And in the middle of this, like, we're taking over this random submarine. And then you have William Dafoe's Volko, I think that's his name.
Yeah.
He's explaining, like, he's basically commentating on the fight between King Orm and Arthur, and being like, this is not a fight, this is an execution. And I'm like, mm-hmm. No shit. So, I mean, there's just stuff like that throughout the film that's just like, man, do they really, do they not trust us at all with anything? We get it.
That script needed another pass. Another few passes, probably.
But with that said, though, James Wan went bonkers. Like, full, like, we're just, you know, gonna have, we're gonna have an octopus, you know, play the drums. We're gonna have Julie Andrews voice a giant kaiju monster.
I love those two things. Are we going into spoilers?
Yeah, we can. The movie's been out for a month.
Okay. One thing that I thought was really ridiculous was when Mara was like eating flowers
in Sicily.
Yeah, like I was just like, I get that she's like an outsider and she doesn't understand, but it was just really weird. It was kind of reminded me of something that would happen in like Venom.
Well, the movie kind of arcs back to Romancing the Stone, but also a little bit of, you know, Splash, the Ron Howard, Tom Hanks movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to do, you know, a bunch of, you know, a bunch of things. And the flower scene is like, again, another problem with screenwriting where it's like, We got to figure out how to, you know, communicate to the audience that these characters are falling in love because we just didn't spend enough time beforehand.
Did you think that Momoa and Heard had good chemistry? Just curious.
I mean, it's better than Hardy and Williams in Venom.
That's a low bar, though.
It's better than, okay, let me try a little better. It's a lot better than is Jane Foster and Thor still a low bar?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let me try again. It's a lot better. It's a lot. No, that's not even a bar. I was about to say Joel Kinnaman in Suicide Squad with Cara Delevingne.
Oh, yeah, that was like non-existent.
It's better than. Okay, I got one. It's better than Amy Adams and Henry Cavill in the Man of Steel movies.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I think they, like, while they're not like the most developed relationship, I buy more into that than I did with Aquaman and Mera.
I think for me that's the problem with those movies, is they never really spend enough time to develop a relationship. So when in BVS, when he's like, "You're my world, I'm gonna save it," at the end of BVS, it's like, what?
You're just like, okay, I don't really care. It's only been two movies, you know?
Yeah.
And like half of this movie was Ben Affleck. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, even the Amazing Spider-Man movies got that part right.
Yeah, that was actually one of the best things about those. Garfield and Stone were great together.
Yeah. So anyway, to answer your question, not really, but I buy the banter enough.
Yeah, I like the banter. It was more like the romantic part of their chemistry that didn't work for me. I mean, like, it's not necessarily didn't work. I thought it was okay. Like, I felt like when they were casting them, it seemed to me, this is just the impression I got, was for Aquaman, they needed to overcome Aquaman being a joke among pop culture. And so they were like, okay, we need to get this big tough dude, and he's also got to be attractive, you know, so all the ladies will come out to see Aquaman. And then for Amber Heard, they're like, oh, let's get a really hot actress, and there you go. It didn't seem like they cast them, it didn't seem like they did like chemistry tests. That's the vibe I got.
Well, here's the thing too, is that they were cast before James Wan was hired on for Aquaman.
They were cast during like BBS and stuff.
So it was always going to be, and honestly, I don't think Zack Snyder is a terrible. He's not terrible at casting. I just think that's one of the, when it came to casting the world of Aquaman, I think he kind of had to oversight that. There was just a big oversight with, you know, with that, because I think on one hand, Snyder, because I think
they're both well cast. I just don't think they had chemistry with one another. That's my thing.
Right. And unfortunately, like, it, you know, falls on to one, you know, and Juan's not as lucky as Patty Jenkins with, because Patty Jenkins at least had to casted Chris Pine.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not, so Juan is kind of just like, I don't know, I'm just going to work with it.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. We'll fix it in post. And that's one of the bigger issues, is even though, I mean, James Wan really tries very hard to sell it, especially with the big, you know, kiss at the end where explosions are going on around them. It's a 360 shot. It's a beautiful shot, but it didn't really build to that, you know, climactic kiss.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
So, David and I just don't buy we didn't buy the chemistry for these characters, or they were building to a loving relationship. Maybe they would have been good friends. They'll be good friends.
I think they could have saved the romance for a sequel or something. I don't know. Made it more, maybe at least a little more convincing.
Yeah, pull Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, where they, you know, keep dragging on the romance because these two characters are still working through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother me. It's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
I really do have to bring up Black Manta though. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I thought I think the best comparison is like Boba Fett or like Captain Phasma. Like, he's a really cool looking character that has a good action sequence, but like is ultimately inconsequential. Like it just felt like kind of wasted. Like, they could have saved him for the sequel or had him been the main villain instead of Orm. I don't know. It seemed like he was kind of just like, we need to throw you in because we want to. I don't know. It just felt like an unnecessary thing to add in. Or I guess it was for Aquaman's arc, because like, he doesn't save his dad, but then he saves Orm. He chooses not to kill Orm at the end. And so I guess it contributes to that. But like, otherwise, it just kind of feels like an extra piece in the puzzle.
Honestly, that's how I feel too, is that I just feel so much that Aquaman, or I feel like that's James Wan trying so hard at the end with the no mercy thing, or now mercy is good. I feel like that's James Wan trying so hard, because the movie kind of feels like there's two scripts happening, or two movies happening. There's the Black Manta movie, and then there's the King Orm movie. And they're both like competing for screen time, even though it's very clear that this is, you know, the King Orm is the main antagonist. He's the one that has the arc. He's the one that's antagonizing Arthur and Mera. So it's very clear that King Orm is the main antagonist, but Black Manta is still, like, you know, poking his head or his helmet around, just like being like, hey, I'm still here.
And it kind of detracts from both their characters, because I think if Orm had more focus, he could have been a great villain instead of like a passable one. And Black Manta would have not felt wasted. I don't know.
Well, to me, go ahead.
Like, obviously, he's going to be in the sequel because they made that like the post credits. But I think if they had chosen, between the two instead of putting both, it would have benefited their character and the narrative as a whole.
Yeah. I mean, really, what I would just say is, what if we had just left? But that's fine. Let's have the submarine scene at the beginning of the movie, but didn't just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, King Orm just sends like a really big muscle dude to, you know, have a big fight with Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's really what at the end Black Manta is reduced to. He's reduced to a person with Atlantean technology. That's just a bigger dude.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just don't find that interesting, and I wish they would have, but I get it. It's Aquaman. Black Manta is was a big thing in the Super Friends show. He's, you know, tied to Aquaman a lot. But that, again, you're right. I don't think it was necessary. And honestly, if you cut him out, I think you could have reworked the whole mercy thing into something, you know, something else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't like, it's not that I don't like Black Manta, it's that it just doesn't need to be here. Again, yeah. You should listen to your movie. Again, and what I mean by that is, it's a, you know, have you ever heard the story of Alan Ball and Sam Mendes when they were talking about the ending of American Beauty?
No.
I don't remember what the context was, but there was an original ending that didn't work with the movie, and they realized it as they were editing. So Sam Mendes told Alan Ball, the screenwriter, we got to change the ending because the movie is telling us to. The movie is telling us to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in that philosophy a lot. You have to listen to your movie sometimes. And I think an Aquaman's trying to say, we don't really need this. We don't really need this character yet.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you know, my only like theory as to why they kept him in is maybe they thought, you know, they would do a post credit scene of Luther teaming up with Black Manta, building more to that Legion of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously that's not happening. So they kind of just did another post credit scene with a guy from Ant-Man and the Wasp. And Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I think Aquaman is a real, I think, well, let me ask you this. What other scenes did you find odd about Aquaman or stuff?
When his mother first like comes into the house and she like eats the fish raw, like she just like snatches it out of the tank and eats it. Like, I mean, it's just one of those like silly moments that it just looks weird in live action, I guess. I don't know. I just found it like unintentionally funny, or maybe it was leaning. So I don't know. I just thought it was strange.
It's also strange in context because, you know, we're led to think that, you know, Atlanta comes from royalty, and you would think she probably wouldn't eat that alive. Like what?
Yeah. And they respected the sea life. I don't know. It just seemed odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And even more odd is they went to the desert to find the thing. Or they went to the desert. Goodness.
The Pitbull song. That there we go.
Oh. Why? The song Toto from Africa is, or Africa.
Yeah, the cover of it. Yeah.
It's really good. Not the Pitbull, but the original cover is really good. Why didn't we use that one?
Or why not just not have a pop song at all?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Why does this movie have so many pop songs?
Like, the score was pretty good. I mean, I don't know. I don't get, like, the over-reliance on pop music. And I don't know. It's like a reoccurring thing. Like, I understand it's kind of like the DNA of Guardians of the Galaxy, so I don't mind it there. I think it actually improves it. But, like, here it just doesn't work for me.
But even then in Guardians, it, you know, it's older songs from that particular era.
Yeah, it works there.
Borrowing from,
and it actually kind of it has a purpose in it, and it says something about what's going on. Like, the songs are meaningful to the narrative, and so it works there. Or like, for instance, like Baby Driver, like there it works also.
Yeah, it also well, yeah, and I understand, like, they're maybe trying to chase the YA crowd, because those YA movies use pop songs and pop artists all the time. I mean, I don't know about you, but I remember specifically when the Bruno Mars cover for Breaking Dawn Part 1 dropped, like in September.
Oh yeah, I remember that. A while ago.
Yeah, that was a lifetime ago. Remember the Twilight movies were huge?
Yeah. No one talks about them.
No, Twilight Saga. Everyone's gonna be like, ever treasures, but like these forever. But no one talks about it. It's talked more than Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
What else is there to say about Aquaman?
I really like the third act a lot. That battle was awesome.
Which part?
Once basically everything after he gets his suit, like when he gets, once he has the orange and gold suit, like the ensuing war battle, you know, when he comes in like on Julie Andrews's crab sea monster thing. And then he like rides a seahorse and he fights Orm.
Yeah, it's the action itself is seen at the beginning, or the tournament scene, or the back to the death scene, the beginning, or the end of the act where Orm. Very visual, and also even in the movie, actually, like, you distinguish between hero and villain when two are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just by clothing, you don't have to like see their faces. You just have to just look at this. Look at this. The silver person. Is that a new technique, David? That, you know, filmmakers are now imploring that now we can do, you know, people with different color or villain people fighting with different colors, so we know what's going on. I'm so used to, you know, metal trash cans fighting metal trash cans.
Is that a dig on like Transformers or
sort of? I don't know. I really like that Bumble. I also like that Bumblebee also had characters with distinct colors fighting each other.
Yes. Yes. That was great. Another scene that was very notable that I thought was incredible was the, I guess the trench scene where James Wan kind of went into his horror roots. And like all the trench people are like coming on the boat and they like jump in and like they're trying to escape with like the flares and stuff. That was a great scene.
It's great not only because it starts scary, but the mood is intense and the way it's visualized with them going down and then they're followed by the trench, dwellers, and as they go going through the, you know, these canyons. It looks great. Like, it's all visual. It's like a painting. Like, the whole movie, a lot of these action scenes, like, with them underwater, it looks like paintings.
Mm-hmm.
It all looks like really cool, moving, three-dimensional concept art. And I mean mm-hmm. that in a good way.
It's definitely one of the more visually striking comic book movies out there.
It is. I can't... And that's kind of why I am highly recommending it so much, because it's so, because I mean, and Marvel's doing better about their visual palette, but I mean, for the longest time, it was all that, you know, it was that concrete palette or that flat like look mm-hmm. in their movies. And I mean, they're now getting better. I mean, Infinity War has some really cool looking imagery. But still it's like, we need, you know, more visually stunning. Like, I want to be wowed when I see this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So, what else is there to say about Aquaman? It's a fine movie.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know what else to say. I'm kind of brain dead at this point.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of touched everything. Weak script, great spectacle.
Yeah. It's a good Christmas, or it's a good movie to watch at Christmas. I don't know what happened with Bumblebee and Mary Poppins, but it's a good movie to watch besides Into the Spider-Verse.
It's a good popcorn blockbuster.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good... And even today, like, as I was, like, watching the movie, like, the theater was still packed. Like, people are still going in droves to see this movie.
Yeah, it's on track to be the first. Well, it's already become the highest grossing DCU release. And it's on track to hit $1 billion within the next day or so.
That's insane. Because you would have thought Wonder Woman or BVS would have hit that by now.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Well, both of those got close. They just... Well, Wonder Woman had really good momentum. It just didn't have as big of an opening. It also was in the summer. So, like, it's kind of a weird comparison because Wonder Woman had a lot of competition for several weeks. Whereas Aquaman, I mean, it does have a lot of competition. But, like, in the winter, I guess there hasn't been any new releases, like, since that week of Christmas, basically.
Yeah, and there won't be until... I mean, I'm already looking at Box Office Mojo. The Bryan Cranston, Kevin Hart movie, The Upside, is already kind of beating it, but just barely.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Glass will probably, you know, shatter the January record.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
very curious to see that, because it's had a split reaction. A very divisive reaction to it, at least.
You're saying it's not, it wasn't Unbreakable? It wasn't, you're
the
saying...
The Shyamalan streak wasn't Unbreakable? That
his two movie streak?
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't even that wild with Split. Like, I thought it was just kind of okay. I thought the performances were very good in it, and it was a pretty good thriller overall, but I thought it was just kind of all right. Like, I wasn't like amazed by it like a lot of other people were. But I am looking forward to Glass, even though the reactions have been kind of all over the place.
You almost had Split.
Yeah, I almost did. But I already made that pun, so.
Yeah. Well, at least it's not happening yet.
I have a sixth sense that I don't even know where I was going to go with that one.
You're looking at the signs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So let's kind of dive into this real quick, because this year we have two DCEU movies. We were going to get three, but Wonder Woman moved to 2020. So, Shazam, which I'm surprised we haven't even gotten a new trailer yet.
I think we will soon.
I hope so. The movie's coming out in April, and even the trailer I saw today, it's the same one that's been playing since August. So
I'm fine with that, though, because I don't like seeing a lot of footage before I see things.
Right. Me too, but especially if it's like Star Wars or Avengers. Like right now with Avengers Endgame trailer, I'm like, okay, that's great. We just needed to see a little bit. Just like we just needed like a release date and a title. That's it. That's it. That's all we needed. I'll be fine till April. For Shazam, it's like, you know, that marketing campaign, it's not necessarily a concern for myself. It's more of a concern for the marketing campaign.
Well, usually the last trailer for a movie will come out like a month or two beforehand. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it at Super Bowl or around there.
Oh, okay. That's correct. Yeah.
And it's not till April. And so that gives them 2 months. And there'll probably be a bunch of TV spots.
And they could probably drop it before the Lego Movie 2.
Oh, that'll probably be where they put it. Because that's the next big Warner Brothers release, I think.
It is. Yeah, it is. So I have to kind of, and for Joker, I mean, it'll be the first one from the Walter Hamada group. Which the Walter Hamada group seems to be going in this direction of doing more and more spinoffs or more Elsewhere stories. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on, you know, the direction of DC or the DCU now that, you know, we're kind of veering away from, you know, the team up movies and we're going more solo outings.
I think it'll be good for differentiating them from Marvel, that they're not trying so hard to be interconnected, that they're like, I mean, I think they will have like a thread through all of them. They will be connected, but I think they're going to focus more on being quality standalones than like a big interconnected universe, because I think they realize trying to copy Marvel isn't going to make them like as successful as Marvel, because they tried to do that already and they kind of rushed into it, and they've now seen that like focusing on making a quality standalone has turned out better for them financially and critically with both Aquaman and Wonder Woman. So I think that's going to be the direction they go.
Yeah, and it's a good decision. I mean, just wait until you do have a group of people that, you know, the fans like, and then maybe coalesce a movie with them. But really, at this point, if you really want to go back to, okay, we are going to make director-driven films, then let's actually allow these directors to make their movies. you know, and not take a and not like take over production.
Well, I think I don't think they've had issues with that. So, well, I mean,
not other,
aside from with Snyder and I guess Suicide Squad, but with Wonder Woman, they didn't. It seemed like they had a positive collaboration with Patty Jenkins. I get the vibe James Wan really enjoyed his experience with Aquaman. I haven't really heard anything negative from Samberg. He's the director of Shazam, I believe.
And right now, Joker's doing okay. I'm hearing some mixed things on Wonder Woman 84, or Wonder Woman 1984. But, I mean, it's nothing totally out of the ordinary yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there might be some things that, you know, rock the boat later this year, but there's nothing that I know. There's nothing that, you know, right now that's like almost that's panic inducing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, to be fair, they have like a year and a half to finish the movie, so
yeah, I'm not worried.
Yeah. That's like the whole filmmaking of a whole, that's like the entire film cycle of one movie is a year and a half for some movies. Yeah, I think for me, the future of DCEU is, you know, it doesn't like the problem wasn't that they were trying to do an interconnected universe. The problem was there was never, the problem was the films themselves never really were enjoyable. I didn't really mind that, you know, in Batman v Superman we were getting teas of Darkseid and Steppenwolf. I didn't really mind those teases at all. The problem was necessarily that the film itself wasn't that good and we didn't need it. That's one of the things that I feel for me that going forward, let's just do standalone movies. And to be fair, Wonder Woman can easily stay standalone as long as it, you know, doesn't come, you know, into modern time. It can be as standalone as it needs to be. And then, you know, Aquaman, you know, keep him in the water. Just keep him in the water. just keep him in the water and keep everything, you know, surface wise in the surface world. And then, you know, we'll worry about Flash and Cyborg and Batman and Superman when we get to them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but I mean Aquaman 2 is definitely going to happen. I mean, this is the most successful DCEU movie yet, so it will happen, and I'm sure they're already making that deal with James Wan to make, you know, a whole trilogy with Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter. So it don't matter at this point. Or it does, but it's, you know, we're just waiting for the, you know, where the chips fall now in reaction to Aquaman.
Yeah.
So with that, is there any more to say right now on the status of DCEU and Aquaman?
No, I feel like we touched on everything I have to say.
All right. Well, with that, want to go into plugins?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. David, where can the good people find you?
At @wiser_David and then at Film Assessment. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at @MovieKill. Right now, the tag is there is a new podcast coming. Which, yes, there. If you're listening to this, you know that this is the podcast that's coming. Or, yeah. Other than that, you can also follow me. You can also follow the channel, the Distributors Podcast at KHZ Network. And you can also follow the Youth Critic Twitter page to just check out, you know, updates and whatnot on the show at the Youth Critic. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back with you soon for more 2018 catch-up and Glass.
Welcome home. Badass! brother has come from the surface to challenge me for the throne.
I call it an ass whooping. I'm no leader. I came because I had no choice. I came to save my home and the people that I love.
You think you're unworthy to lead because you're of two different worlds. But that is exactly why you are worthy.
That was awesome.
The war is coming to the surface. And I'm bringing the wrath of the seven seas with me.
We're here.
What are you doing?
Where are you?
She never parachute.
Redheads, you gotta love them.